And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a man who doesn't know I actually know who he is before I saw this movie. And we're going to get into that because I know he does not know. John Miore?
Yeah, Miore. That's good.
I'm close. His film Creature from Cannibal Creek is what we're going to discuss this week. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm going to let you in on a secret because I know you don't know this secret. How I know who you are before you didn't even know. I've seen one of your other films.
Oh, which one?
I've seen you in Dana.
Yes, of course. That makes sense.
I did an interview with the director of Dana when that came out.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So I thought you'd find that funny that I knew who you were before you even came on.
That's another movie where I eat people. I do that a lot in movies.
Yeah, I think you enjoy eating people. I mean, is that your thing? When you read a script, you're like, I need to eat somebody. I'll take that one.
Could we add a scene here where maybe I eat my co-star? Can we do that?
Yeah, because, I mean, in Dana, you don't really wait for your wife. You're just kind of hungry.
I'm a hungry guy. I can't help it. That's for sure.
Well, welcome to the show, officially now.
Thank you.
How did you find your forest? Like, you spend a lot of time in this forest.
That forest is in Cayuga. The guy that plays Eddie in the movie, it's his property and around his property. And what happened was, I wanted to make one more feature film. I'm not sure if I'll ever make another feature film myself. I've done like six now, and it's, you know, really all encompassing. But for this last one, he was like, you know what? I always really wanted you to shoot something here because we've got all this property. It looks great. You know, I really think you should film something here. So what happened was one day he had me over at his house and we're walking through it. And he's like, you know, and here's an old shack. And I went, oh, an old shack. We can definitely use that for something. And look at this. We've got this barn that has, you know, all these cages in it. And I said, well, what are the cages for? And it's like, oh, well, we used to keep dogs and we have all these cages. And I went, wow, cages in a barn. That's an interesting idea. And then we kept walking through his place and it's like, well, here's a pen. He goes, yeah, it's got an electrified fence. And I went, that's interesting. What's this for? And he said, well, that, you know, the people that lived here before me kept horses in here. And the more we looked at his property, the more the script just kind of wrote itself for this movie.
So when you were walking on this, you're talking to Eddie going, are you sure this is a farm? Like, it seems like it's already pre-built.
Yeah, it was just one of those places where everything was perfect. Everything was awesome. There are scenes, forests being forests, there are scenes where it looks like we ran for miles from one part to another. And I mean, you end up 15 feet away from where you ended because it just, everything looks so, you turn around and it looks different again. And so I don't know. It was a great place to film.
I think you filmed this in the summer, it looks like. It looks pretty hot in the film.
Yeah, and those of us that were in the monster suit really felt it.
Okay, well, I was getting there. So you had three people playing the monster?
Yes, depending on certain situations.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Why did we have a change in the person wearing the monster suit? Why did the situation change?
Well, most of the time it was Mike Treblecock, who also wrote the music for the movie. He really was into it. He wanted to play the monster, and it just was, you know, something that he really wanted to do. And I was like, hey, that's great. Frees me up to film. But he couldn't be there every single day that we were filming. And this being the kind of film where it was a pretty tight schedule and obviously made on a really, really microscopic budget. So anytime he couldn't be there, my son would come and he would be the monster. And so Nicholas is the other person that's listed as the monster. What's great from my perspective, seeing the two of them, you know, Mike has a way of moving and Nicholas has a way of moving that when most people watch the movie, I'm sure that they'd never tell the difference. But I can really see, okay, that's Nicholas. Just the way he kind of, you know, it's kind of like a flowy movement, and Mike is more of a, you know, charging monster. You really see the difference if you know, I guess. And then the third person was myself, because I play the character that turns into the monster. And there's a scene where that I, as that character, get buried under a lot of gunk, and then I rise up as the monster. And I wanted to do that scene entirely myself, where, you know, buried, and then the rising, it's me again. So I wanted it to at least have that as me as the monster.
So when you get buried, it's like leaves and sticks and a bunch. Like, were you worried about bugs?
Yeah, I was very worried, and that's why I did it instead of asking someone else to do it. Because, you know, everyone was worried about ticks while we were filming this. And Mike actually got a tick in him, in his leg somewhere, I think it was. And he managed to get it out at home, but everybody was worried about it and whatever else comes with it, Lyme disease, whatever else. And so I had put in this scene of burial, and I was like, I can't ask anybody else to do this. So, you know, that was the reason I did it.
That makes sense. Since you brought up your creature early, let's discuss creature design.
Yes.
Like, he has a very distinct look.
Yeah, and it's I mean, you've got the poster there, and the poster at Wild Eye Design for distribution doesn't really look like the creature in the movie. It's cool. I like it, but it doesn't really look like the creature in the movie. I'd say the creature in the movie was there's a little bit of Man Thing. I loved Man Thing growing up as a comic book guy. And I was always a Howard the Duck fan, and Man Thing and Howard the Duck kind of went side by side. Right. So, the eyes are very Man Thing, you know, those red glowing eyes. And, you know, there's a little bit of the Heap in there. There's a little bit of, Swamp Thing. I really wanted it to have that comic book feel. And that's why there's scenes where it looks like pages are turning as you're watching the movie. I really wanted it to feel like a comic book. So there was that comic book inspiration. And then, of course, there was all the, you know, cheesy horror movie inspiration, things like Octoman and all kinds of different creature movies from the 50s, like some of the Roger Corman stuff. All of that really went into the whole design.
Now, when you were making this film, since you brought up Corman, I would say you're going for that Corman style. I mean, obviously, Corman works on a low budget. You're working on a low budget. You really have to make every scene work for your film. I understand you have to cut narrative. Don't worry, I get it.
Yeah.
So was that your plan, to be more of a Corman director and say, okay, this is the money we got, I'm going to show you everything on the screen?
Yeah, that's the first thing I do when I've approached most of my films. After the first one, I did one where I really didn't know how I was going to do what I was doing. It's called The Friday Night Death Slot. And it's made up of a bunch of short films. And we made all the shorts separately and then tried to piece it together with a narrator and, you know, between segments. And so it's a bit of a mishmash, that movie. And there's some really cool segments and there's some not so cool segments in that. But that, I was thinking, you know what'll be easy? It'll be easy to make a movie like this because it's all these short bits. And it ended up being probably the hardest of my films, because every time you do a short bit and now you do another one, it's a different location and different actors and different props. And it ended up becoming very, very difficult. So then after that, I moved more into that, what you're saying, that very planned Roger Corman-like style of, I've got a location, I build my story around the location, I have, you know, characters and props that can fill up the story. And the other thing that I like to do, I don't know if Corman did this, this is something I like to do, is I like when you can compartmentalize people's parts. So you're like, okay, you're here for the day, you're going to be killed by the monster, and then you go home. And then tomorrow I'll bring somebody else in to get killed by the monster. And as long as you have a main group of characters that come back throughout the story, like the cannibals do, then you don't notice so much that those parts are, you know, kind of shot, you know, in one little compartment.
I would say I noticed, but I think I watched too much film. I mean, if I'm just putting this on, enjoying my Friday night, I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, I find as an indie filmmaker, as yourself, I let a lot go when I watch an indie film. A lot. I can't judge you on something you don't have money for, is what I try to tell people.
Yeah. And what's funny is, you know, whenever I've almost never been attacked over, you know, oh, look at these movies that you make or whatever else. Because the truth of the matter is, I think either people have fun knowing what they're getting into. I mean, I worked on a movie called Ouija Shark. If you come to Ouija Shark acting like, well, you know, this is ridiculous, the shark is a ghost, it's like, okay, it's called Ouija Shark. What in the world is wrong with your point of view? You can't see that this isn't serious. Like, people have said to me, you know, is that for real? I went, yes, Ouija Shark is for real. Watch out. Like, of course it's not for real. But, oh, well.
Oh, my God. I'm just laughing that somebody would ask you that stupid question. Most of your kills are not shown. I presume that's a budgetary restraint issue.
Yes. And, they're either not shown. I'm trying to think, specifically, or they're light on gore. There's not a lot of heavy gore. That probably had to do with budget. It probably had to do with just people outside in the hottest of hot weather, you know, bad enough having to lay out in the heat with bugs and ticks and everything else, but now put sticky fake blood all over them. And, you know, so yeah, I guess we kept it to a minimum. It also kind of has more of a 1950s, 1960s feel that way, I think.
Oh, I'm with you. I think it's like Quartermass, or I don't want to get into this with you, or Humanoids from the Deep. It very has a, if that's what you're going for, we're totally on the same wavelength. So you just discussed blood. Do you like working with blood, or you just like it's a necessity?
When I sort of started in the whole, you know, acting in indie movies or whatever, I kind of got in because of zombie stuff, right? I did a lot of zombie movies. And so anytime I could do something that was that little bit grosser, that little bit, you know, that money moment that people go, okay, I remember the scene where you tore that guy in half, or I remember the scene where you pulled that guy's eye out with your teeth. Like, that's what I wanted to do. So part of it is necessity, but part of it is also, I mean, that's where all the fun is, right? So sure, I want to do that stuff.
Perfect. I find your film, I wrote down, everybody has a character and everybody is a character. Like, yeah. Nobody seems to be playing themselves. Everybody seems to be having fun, including the cannibals. Obviously, I'm supposed to be afraid of them, but
well,
I get it. I know where you're going with them.
Pretty fun. They're pretty funny. I think I find them very funny. I look at it as everybody else in the movie is in a horror movie where they're getting killed and whatever else. And these people that are the count, they're in a comedy. And I kind of got that to a certain extent from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If you watch Chainsaw Massacre, all these people are terrified and they're sitting around the table laughing it up and having a great time. Like it's a big joke. And I really like that aspect of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So this being not Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but having cannibals, I like the idea of they're just having a good time. It's everybody else that's freaking out about what's going on.
You're very correct. Who made the mask for the cannibal? The one cannibal wears a mask the whole film.
Yeah, Eddie. I made that mask. It's base. It was like a kid's Iron Man mask. And I liked it because it was very plastic and hard and sturdy. So I knew it wasn't going to fall apart or get dented or whatever else. And it had a band on it to hold it to his head. So we never had issues with it breaking or falling off. And then all I did was I applied lots and lots of paper mache over top of the Iron Man elements to obscure them, get rid of them. And then I used a tea bag to just darken it all. So, I mean, you know, the whole thing, I think I bought the mask used at a thrift store for $3 and the rest was, you know, paper towels and tea bags.
Well, that's using your budget wisely, I would say. I mean, a big budget movie would have spent $5,000 on having somebody making that mask.
I got to say, one thing that I want people to know about my movies is I do work when I'm making them myself on a micro budget. And I really do try to make them as well as I can. With the kind of themes that I like about whatever the genre is that I'm going in on. But at the same time, I'm very aware of, I only have so much money and I don't put on airs, trying to pretend that, well, yes, I did spend $10,000 on this movie, because if you do that, then people are going to look and say, well, I don't see it on the screen. But when you tell people, yeah, I made that with paper towels and tea bags, they go, well, that's pretty good considering.
It's true. I guess you have an animated credit sequence.
Yeah.
Is that for the comic book background? Is that something, who did that for you? Because I mean, that couldn't have been a cheap expense, or do you have friends?
Yeah, I made that myself. Yeah, I did the animation for that myself.
So, I liked it. So what did you use to make that?
Well, Final Cut Pro, which is what I use for editing, has some very limited animation appliances where you can make things move or spin or turn. And over the years I've made, there's a creature from Cannibal Creek cartoon that you can see online. And I just used drawings that I made and the very limited Final Cut Pro animation that you can apply. And so the cartoon's fun. I suggest you look it up. It's called Creature from Cannibal Creek, Get Me Pictures. And it's about a reporter that goes into the forest looking for the creature. So over the years, I've been doing some limited animation anyway. And the stuff that I did in the credits was really simple, really, really simple.
But so I'm it glad worked. You liked it.
Yeah, it's fun. I liked it too. I'm glad to hear it because the Mike who does the music was a little concerned that, oh, you know, an opening credit scene, you know, it always kind of slows down the story. And I know, but I got this great idea of what I want to do. So I'm glad you liked it.
Okay, we're going to get to Mike in a second before I can ask my next question. Then we'll get to Mike. So Mike, don't worry, we're going to get to you. Do you storyboard your film then, since you're an artist, ahead of time?
Very, very simply. And usually, certainly not weeks and months before, but the night before I'm going to go shoot, I want to make sure that, if I'm planning on things like, you know, I need a close up, I need a far shot, I need, you know, specific angles that work for me, I like to just do a very simple, it's almost, stick figures, really, you know, very, very simple, just so that I know where I'm going. So I do, but they're very simple. And, oh, there was something else I was going to tell you there. Oh, well, I'll remember it in a bit, I guess.
Okay, we have to get to music. Could you keep bringing up the music? And he's going to be upset with us if we don't mention. So how does you score your films? Do you just tell him what you're going to do ahead of time, or he just knows what he's going to do ahead of time?
Usually, when Mike and I work together, I don't know how he works with other people. It may be similar, it may be different. But when Mike and I work together, there's almost always a let's watch the movie without any music, the cut of the movie. And I'll talk through it sometimes and say, you know, I feel like something creepy here. Or remember that scene in Star Wars where this happened and the music swells in this appropriate way. So, and that's one thing that I'm sure he'll laugh hearing is, you know, I'm always saying, you know, in this movie where there's this music like that, but not like that. So there's that discussion. And then, I'm happy that, I started, asking Mike at the beginning, and he's been doing it for a lot of other people now. I always ask for an end credit song, and I want the end credit song to, you know, reflect something about the movie and a feeling about the movie. So, this time around he did, a Roger Corman song because I was like, you know, this is really based on a lot of Roger Corman type stuff. And it's a throwback to that kind of film. It'd be great if we could mention Roger Corman and somehow in the song mention all the titles of these different, I gave him a list of movies and he's like, you know, had to go away and say, I got to make a song up with Roger Corman and all the names of these movies that this guy wants. But I knew he could do it because he's Mike Trumbullcock. So that's a great song. I really like it.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry, I'm not trying to get on next topic. Yeah. Cages. What's it like to be in a cage?
What's it like to be in a cage? Well, you're hoping that they're going to let you out.
Yeah, I would hope so.
You're in there, but it's one of those things where, like that scene with the cages, we filmed. There's a scene where several people are talking in a cage, and none of them were available on the same day. And I knew that going into it, that none of them were going to be
really?
Available. Yeah. And so what I did was I set up, when we set up the cages, we put them in places where you would never see the two cages side by side so that, you know, the camera frame wouldn't show more than one cage at a time. And then because the cages were there, I'd just say the person you're talking to is in that cage. The person you're talking to is over in that cage. And so we filmed Steve Slavy talking to Lena and myself, and none of those were filmed on the same day.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. So perfect job then.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
Okay. You do have a shot of, I put an old nudity film.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
There's a website that has nothing but old public domain films on it. Oh, why is it slipping my mind? If I remember, I'll tell you later. But you can go in and download things from this website and use them. And one day I found all these stag films on there. And I know a lot of times, especially with the distributor, you know, they're like, oh, you're making a horror movie. Well, you know, do you have blood? Do you have boobs? Do you have, you know, they have a list of what they want, right? And I had done nudity in not myself, but I've had people do nudity in some of the other movies. And even though the people were great that I worked with, all really great, in fact, I was always uncomfortable with it. And so, again, this movie being one where I intentionally took shortcuts that made it easier to film. Not cheesy shortcuts, but just like, you know, I think sensible shortcuts. And them watching a stag film, I thought, that's perfect.
Oh, it works.
Yeah, I got the boobs and I didn't have to have the awkward moments.
Okay, this may be just a personal opinion, but I'm going to ask you, what woman lets her husband pick up a hitchhiker?
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, what is going on there? I'm like, where is he going with this scene?
It's funny because, you know, you got to store your thoughts on that in the same place people store their thoughts on, you know, trying to make sense of Ouija Shark. Please don't try to make sense of me. Don't try to apply too much logic to these kind of movies. Just go with it.
I went with it. I was just a question. I was like, oh, okay. I really think we'd be upset if we didn't discuss casting of your film.
Sure.
Basically, you know who I want to discuss is Mother.
Yes, Deborah is fantastic.
Like, we should be upset, and we've already discussed Eddie casually. Yeah. Mother has to come up. Awesome casting job.
Yeah. Well, Deborah, I've worked with on almost all my films. I could always see, like, you know, she's a go-getter. You can see that she's ready to go and do whatever needs to be done. And I could see, you know, I did another movie called Poltergeist Encounters where she's a very serious, strict, you know, older woman that's, you know, just a very tight kind of character. And she can pull that off. And, you know, then she's been on this show that I did called Partially Devoured Movies and the Midnight Movie Palace, a couple of shows that I've done. And she's shown it. She can be very comedic. And so when we got to this, I just thought, I'm just going to write stuff that makes me giggle as I'm writing. I just wrote like the just, you know, most horrible, goofy, stupid, you know, swear laden things that I could think of. And she just delivered, man. It was great.
This movie, has this movie screened in front of a live audience or you can't mm-hmm. because of COVID?
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah, no, it did. It did.
So yeah, I'm going to
lots of laughs. Lots okay. of laughs.
What did everybody think of Mother? Is that the one topic that comes up the most, or what's the most topic that comes up during the screening questions?
I don't know. I think a bunch of different kind of things came up. A lot of things that you've already talked about, but I mean, it's kind of her breakout role, right? And the other thing that, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but she deals with all these non-speaking type characters like
yeah,
Eddie.
Nobody talks.
Yeah, Eddie just grunts.
You know? The whole movie,
and that's all he does for the whole movie. So she's trying to remember lines, and she's like, "You give me nothing. I say a line, and I pause for a minute. He goes, and I'm supposed to remember my next line." So yeah, it was a challenge for her, but she did great.
Well, you kind of. I hate to ruin your film. I'm going to try to be the best. One of the characters that should have interacted disappeared very early in the film.
Yes. Are we talking Neptune?
Yes.
Neptune was available for 2 days. And so He got the 2-day treatment.
Oh yeah, he did get the 2-day treatment. That's for sure.
I'll give you an example. Poltergeist encounters that we did. It's a bunch of people in a haunted house overnight, and they're trapped inside, and they got to survive the night. We shot it without a script. We had a rough outline of what was going to happen. We shot 53 minutes of the movie in one night that ended up in the final feature that came out. Again, it's also from Wild Eye. And Rochelle Hopkins is the female character in the movie. And, you know, spoiler alert here, but she dies first. And she died first because she's like, I have to go to work tomorrow. I can't stay any later than 2 a.m. And I went, okay, well, you die first then. And that's, you know, that's when you're micro filmmaking. That's just the way things go sometimes.
Is there going to be a sequel?
I doubt it. But there's sort of a prequel.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
There's probably not going to be a sequel for a number of reasons. One, including, we stored the monster suit right at the a garage at the forest area. And over the winter, squirrels built a nest inside the monster suit and basically ate all the insides to make their little nest. So there's no more monster suit. That's all gone. And so there's that. And then, in 1990, I made a movie called Bloody Voodoo Sock Puppet. And 2 years later, this is on VHS. And 2 years later, in 1992, we made Curse of the Bloody Voodoo Sock Puppet. And they're both really cheesy. The first one's really bad. The second one's entertaining, funny. And what I did earlier this year, because it was released this year, we released Curse of the Bloody Voodoo Sock Puppet 30th Anniversary Special Edition. And it is also about a killer that there's some cannibal tendencies as well in that movie. And what we did was we went back to Cannibal Creek and we filmed new scenes with Deborah. And she tells the story like these killers from the 1990 movie are related to the killers from the 2019 movie. So we get some more fun with Deborah. We get a teenage Eddie, and we revisit some of the locations. So I think that's the best you're gonna get.
fun.
It's a fun little movie. It's a fun little move.
It's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, and I know yours too, your fun questions.
Okay, I'm ready.
Because I know you've been listening to interviews and getting ready for these.
I'm ready.
Because your first time on the show, because you refused to come on for Dana, I need your favorite film.
I did not refuse. All right, go ahead.
Your favorite film, please.
My favorite film of, like, Not no genre specific, just favorite.
Whatever
film.
You want to do.
First Star Wars movie. I love Star Wars. Favorite comedy, Airplane. Oh my God, I love Airplane. I don't know if I've seen any movie more times than Airplane. Favorite drama, Casablanca. Favorite horror film, probably The Shining.
Fair enough.
There you go.
So your favorite comic book.
For years, it was Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, that's what I collected for decades. But, you know, I love Howard the Duck. I love the old Star-Lord comics from the 70s.
Nothing wrong with those.
You know.
Okay. Since you've made a bunch of films, do you have advice you give indie filmmakers when they ask you?
I do. It all depends on the situation. But I guess what I was suggesting about how I film this film and even how I film Poltergeist Encounters or Exorcism of the Dead, I think it's good before you even write a script to be aware of what you have and what you can utilize without spending money. Because in the end, you know, if you spend $1,000 on your movie or $20,000 on your movie, probably not going to look that different. True. You know, like it's still not going to look like a big budget movie. So, I would say look around, see what you've got, and make good use of what you've got before you start spending a lot of cash.
Before I let you go, we got to tell everybody where they can find your movie.
Creature from Cannibal Creek comes out, I think it's the 13th on DVD from Wild Eye Releasing.
October 13th?
October 13th. So it's
I'm going to help you out of it, just so people know.
Yeah, it's on DVD this month, less than a week away. It's already pre-selling on Amazon. The other movie, Curse of the Bloody Voodoo Sock Puppet 30th Anniversary, it's on my Vimeo channel. It costs, I think, $1 to rent. My Vimeo channel is just Survival Zombie Films on Vimeo. So you can see that there. And you can see there's lots of free content there, partially devoured movies, all kinds of stuff.
You forgot one film, Ouija Shark.
Oh, Ouija Shark. Ouija Shark is a Brett Kelly film. It was also released from Wild Eye Releasing. And I'm pretty sure, it might already be on video on demand. I think it might be. You can see my other movies on Tubi. Exorcism of the Dead and Poltergeist Encounters are both on Tubi.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.